This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is looking at last week's debate, how it may impact the outcome of the upcoming election, and whether it will be both the first and last debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. So far, that does seem to be the case. The morning after the debate, which saw Harris and Trump go back and forth on a number of topics, including fracking, the southern border, abortion, the January 6th insurrection, allegations of immigrants eating pets, and more, Trump said he was finished. When Harris requested a second matchup, Trump posted this on Truth Social. When a prizefighter loses a fight, the first words out of his mouth are, "I want a rematch." While Trump claims that polls show he won the debate, most of the numbers actually show otherwise. A CNN flash poll taken at the end of the debate last Tuesday saw 63% of viewers name Harris the victor. An ABC Ipsos poll released this week found that 58% of viewers felt Harris won, compared to just 36% who felt Trump did. In a Reuters Ipsos poll taken in the days after the debate, it was found that Harris had regained the ground she lost in the days leading up to her face-off with Trump. At the time of that poll, she led among likely voters 47% to Trump's 42%. Trump saying he isn't going to agree to another debate seems to be a pivot for the GOP candidate. Previously, he had been adamant that he and Harris should face off multiple times. David McEwen, chair of the political science department at Sonoma State University, helped us take a closer look at this changeup.
Oh, Trump in all caps. There will be no third debate, while claiming that he won and then launched into some sort of boxing analogy. And I'm just wondering if that's going to change, because according to the first poll out of the gate of that debate, that's the Morning Consult survey, Harris has expanded her lead over Trump. Do you think it might change, or is he going to stick to his stance here? He flip-flops on a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, he does. Of course, that's been his kind of forte, his trade, if you will. But look, when you're Kamala Harris and you did so well on Tuesday night, you asked for a second debate with no intention of having another debate. If you're Donald Trump, given the performance he just had, this is not a place you want to go. One reason for that is Donald Trump didn't do anything on Tuesday night to close the gender gap. The gender gap is the largest we've seen in presidential politics. It's about 18 points. That's almost 50% larger than what we saw in 2020 and 2016. So if you look at that, there are more female voters than male voters. The voting demographics are changing. You should see a slight bump for Kamala Harris out of that debate. And that says nothing about what happens with Taylor Swift and with the Swifties. And then if Beyonce were to come on and the Beehive, then they'd really be behind the ball. So that means Donald Trump has to consider a different strategy. And I would guess that that strategy would be going extremely negative against the vice president.
I'm going to ask you a very basic question. Are you surprised by Donald Trump's decision today?
No. Should there be another debate? Yes. Will there be? Not after Tuesday night. Not a surprise at all, Patty. It puts a lot of pressure, I think, however, on that vice presidential debate, October 1st. Usually we don't think vice presidential selections matter. Usually we don't think vice presidential debates matter. But if you have a race that's razor thin, it's this close, right? Then small moments can be important. So talking about issues related to working class, the economy, all of that will be very important for Coach Walz and for the designate J.D. Vance. That will make the vice presidential debate slightly more important than it otherwise would be. A point here or there on each side can make a difference, particularly in those battleground states we're always talking about.
Kamala Harris is boasting a 40 million plus campaign infusion 24 hours after that debate. What do you think this will do to fundraising efforts for both campaigns if there is not another debate between the two?
Yeah, that's an appropriate question in this sense. Look, if you're a big ticket donor and you normally give to Donald Trump and you don't think his message is working, you hold back on that check. And what you do is you take a picture of that check and you send it to the campaign and say, this is what we'd like you to do if you had a coherent or consistent message. If you're Kamala Harris, you take the money that you have in those 24 hours. But more than that, you start to build down ballot. That helps you in House races. That helps you alleviate some of the losses in Senate races. And we've already seen this because Kamala Harris and Democrats, while they moved money last week down ballot, they particularly moved money into Nebraska. They're hoping to pick up one electoral vote just in Nebraska, in Omaha, where the gun issue is particularly acute. That helps them take one of the four votes away from Nebraska. Just by doing that, it helps pitch them over the top in a state they normally wouldn't go to. So it does expand their monetary base. But Donald Trump is here in California, coming to the ATM of American politics tomorrow morning. As a matter of fact, he'll be in Southern California to raise and gather some of that money.
However, the landscape shifted quickly again, as it has so many times so far this election cycle. Over the weekend, Trump was the target of an assassination attempt. That's the second attempt on his life within the past 3 months. While he was golfing at Trump International Golf Club Sunday, the former president's Secret Service detail opened fire at a suspect who was pointing an AK-47 with a scope at the course. Law enforcement has said that the gunman intended on shooting Trump before he was spotted. So what will happen now that Trump has survived not one, but two assassination attempts? When Trump survived a gunshot wound in that first attempt this July during a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, the former president saw a boost in support, and the nation called for unity, as well as an end to political division. Now many are wondering if his lagging numbers will get another boost. To share more on the shooting at the start of this week, ABC's Josh Margolin joined Odyssey.
This suspect, I guess we do know a little bit about him. He had been active online, and we know of some of his interests that could lead to finding out more in this investigation, right?
That's what it's looking like right now. Obviously, there are a lot of caveats because they have not formally charged him, they have not formally identified him, but it does seem that this individual was at one point a Trump supporter some years ago. He then soured on Trump, and it seems that his issue, to the extent that there is a political kind of philosophy at work here, his issue is Ukraine. He went to Ukraine. He had done interviews. He wanted to be a fighter in Ukraine in their war against Russia, and he was disturbed with President Trump, apparently.
Josh, do we know if he fired shots at Trump yesterday?
Actually, we don't know the answer to that question. It's because nobody has a video of what actually occurred. We know that they have retrieved bullets or shell casings from his weapon at that spot. Now, the question is, did he just drop bullets out of a box as he was loading the weapon? Did he fire test shots at some other point that nobody ever heard? So that's going to be one of the angles of questions today, whether or not that happened. We also know there were shots fired for sure by the Secret Service defending Trump, right? They like you see on television in the movies, they shouted at the guy something along the lines of put the gun down, hands up, who are you, whatever. And then he did not listen to their direction, and they fired in his direction, and that's when he took off.
And then it seems like an important point that maybe we'll never really know the answer to, Josh. Why was he there in the first place? Did he know something about the president's schedule that wasn't publicized?
Well, right. That's obviously something that they're investigating. There are a couple of points on that. First of all, the stop at the golf club was not publicized, but this is one of the places that Trump does go to in Florida when he's in Florida. So somebody who might familiarize themselves with Trump's activities and the locations he frequents might know to look there. But obviously, they didn't announce that Trump was going there, and they certainly didn't announce that he was going to play, you know, a round of golf. So how did the guy get there? But the spot is known to the Secret Service. It's known to the media that follows Trump. This is a location at the golf club where you actually have a line of sight from outside the fence line. And so he was outside the security perimeter, technically, but with a line of sight to the course, to the green right there. So that they have to find out. And that's why one of the reasons why they're looking at his phone, social media. Did he follow Trump? Was he planning this? There is a report right now that we believe is accurate, that he had apparently visited the location several times, the alleged would-be attacker. But did he visit other locations also is the question.
You know, I'm also wondering, too, is there a different level of security if he's at a campaign event versus doing something personal, like golfing?
Well, there absolutely are different levels of security for all of these protectees. They're all in the category of protectees, right? And then you have the president is the highest level. And then you have the candidates, you have the vice president, and the group of vehicles and security that travel with those people depends on their jobs. Obviously, a presidential candidate doesn't necessarily have all of the military and national security stuff that follows along with the president of the United States. But when Trump, even as an ex-president, is traveling around, there's an ambulance and there are other kinds of things. It's like 40 cars that travel with him. But Secret Service likes to use secrecy to help with security. So they believe that if they don't announce a visit, then obviously it's a more secure visit because the public doesn't know the president's going to be there or the person is going to be there. In the case of a public campaign rally, everyone knows that the person's going to be there. And so they have to take extra precautions because if, God forbid, somebody is planning to do something, they know where they're going and they know that the person that they might be aiming for is going to be on site.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
As for the debate, the former president expressed in the days after that his matchup with Harris was a 3-1. By that, Trump meant that he believes the moderators from ABC News made things unfair by fact-checking his statements. Trump claimed that Harris wasn't nearly fact-checked as much as he was. But what is it like to try to moderate a debate with someone who's known for stretching the truth? Margaret Brennan, moderator of Face the Nation, offered her thoughts on that this week.
You've done a lot of analysis of the debate. I've seen, watched some of it. I just want to get sort of your takeaways from it as you interview these candidates. Mm-hmm. You cover this so much. What are your takeaways from that debate?
Well, it's interesting. This Sunday, I'm going to have J.D. Vance, a junior senator from Ohio, on the program, who is Trump's running mate. And he's the guy who tends to do more on policy. And I expect him to perhaps pick up some of those things that Donald Trump did not get to in his nearly 2-hour debate on Tuesday night. Most of what we saw on that stage was personality driven. I think a lot of analysts, including Republicans like Karl Rove, the longtime Republican campaign advisor, has said that it was the vice president who won that. She repeatedly baited Donald Trump with things that had very little to do with substance, things like, you know, the size of his rallies, those sort of things. And he took that bait each and every time, showing in some ways how he can easily be manipulated, as she alleged. There were some, you know, bending of facts, stretching of truth that the vice president did, but it was minimal compared to some of the more outlandish things that Donald Trump said, like, you know, that the false claims he was making on a number of fronts, including the election results in 2020 and Haitian migrants in Ohio. So some of that was really a distraction from the things that the American people are concerned about and that we'll try to talk about on Sunday.
Do you watch these things and think, oh, I would have asked this, or I wish they would have done this? Do you do that in your head?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And, yeah. And you know, CBS has a debate October 1st with the vice presidential candidates. So I'm taking notes throughout going, oh, wow, that was interesting, and how they had a debate and conversation like that. I mean, these are unusual times and information environment that we are living in. You know that well. And so we spend a lot of time into trying to think about, or at least I do, trying to think about how to make the most of the moments that we have to try to pull information out or get at something a different way.
You'll be moderating that one, the vice presidential one?
Yes, I will be one of the two moderators. My colleague, Nora O'Donnell of the Evening News, will also be joining me.
Do you just relish this chance? Do you hate the scrutiny? How does that? Because, man, these moderators, they're under fire, too.
Yes, that's 100% accurate. And it's a extremely large audience of viewers. I mean, you saw that with just the numbers that were reported in terms of viewership of the presidential debate. For the vice presidential candidates, I would argue, again, we're in this scenario where you have a 78-year-old candidate, and the question of who is his backup, who is his vice president, will matter because of that advanced age as well. J.D. Vance will stand on that stage. He's not very well known in terms of the very short period of time he has spent in Washington, although he has been on a national stage in other ways as a writer and investor. And Tim Walz has, you know, burst to the forefront, as you know, in a short period of time in this sprint since Vice President Kamala Harris moved to the top of the ticket. So I feel like there are a lot of people curious who will be tuning in a way that maybe doesn't normally reflect interest in a vice presidential debate. But it's nerve-wracking, certainly, because all the networks are watching this closely, and CBS will be hosting it. So obviously we hope everyone tunes into our broadcast of it, but it'll be across the airways and analyzed.
In the days after the second assassination attempt on Trump's life, our nation's leaders once again called for unity. The former president thanked law enforcement for what he called an incredible job, in not only keeping him safe, but also apprehending the suspected gunman. President Joe Biden and Vice President Harris were briefed on the matter immediately and said they were relieved to know their political rival was safe. "Violence has no place in America," Harris wrote on X. We should note that Trump's running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, has blamed the assassination attempts on things Democrats say about Trump, like that he's a danger to democracy. At the same time, some Democrats point to Trump's own violent rhetoric. An example of this is a spring quote from Trump. He said, "Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole country." And at the January 6th speech that preceded the Capitol riot, he told the crowd, "You'll never take back our country with weakness." So, with fingers pointing and even bullets flying, can America ever move back to a place where we can disagree peacefully? Eva Chang, former managing director of leadership and programming at the Bush Institute, thinks it is possible. In an essay, she pointed out famous examples where disagreements led to a better world, like the creation of the United States itself, where the founding fathers battled it out on principles before accepting the ones we still hold dear today. For us to pull it off in the ever-quickening pace of the 2020s, Chang suggests slowing down to think more rationally about opposing viewpoints, and when we find ourselves in disputes, political or otherwise, it's good to get to know the other person on a personal level, to see their viewpoints in a different light, one that's not our own. When all else fails, we can always change the subject, and we should make sure that we fact-check our own points. After all, that's how a question about a border bill in the last presidential debate became an existential threat to the dogs and cats of Ohio. We can only imagine what we'll hear if there's a debate rematch. And even though Trump said he won't do another debate, many people believe the door is still a little bit open. One of those people is Alyssa Farah Griffin. She's a CNN commentator who used to serve as Trump's White House communications director. "I would predict that he may change his tune on this," Griffin said. Here at On Deadline, we'll be staying tuned in so we can tell you all about it if it happens. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.
informed.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.